I want to welcome everyone. Thank you for being here, and thank you for all the people that are online. Can you hear me? If you can hear me, please just Skype yes for Cabrilla to see that you can hear well. So we'll wait just a moment. There's someone else joining us, so we just have an opportunity to sit and do nothing. How wonderful is that? Everyone, and through the wonders of technology, Piero Murshid Hidayat and I, Hans, going to join us from, I believe he's in Germany right now, to begin our class for us. So if we could call Murshid Hidayat and invite him in.
Hello.
Yes. Hello, Murshid Hidayat and Murshida Aziza. It's your loving devotees here in Kansas City and abroad. We have some people joining us via Skype, and we ask that you begin our class for us. And if you have a few words of advice and wisdom, we have open and ready hearts to receive that as well.
Can we start with the invocation?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, a lot?
Yes.
Was the perfect love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated soul who form the embodiment.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. And some words of wisdom or some thoughts for the day for us as we begin our class. We're actually, the subject of today's class is on the moral culture, training the ego and the animal side of man. So it's quite a hearty subject for us to deal with. And as Sufis, we're always looking at clarifying that ego so that we can have the nobility of the soul shining forth. And your years of experience and practice and insight, do you have any kind words for us today, or inspiring words or commanding words? We probably need some good direction at this point.
You know, I have to tell you that the sound is very bad. I can hardly hear you. I can hardly understand you. I don't know what's the matter. It's a very bad.
Well, we're sorry for that.
Shall I disconnect and call you back in a moment? It might be better.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, we'll try it.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello, yes?
Can you hear us better now?
Yeah, a little bit better, yeah. But if it's not going to be better, I'm sorry, you'll have to excuse me.
That's all right. We can hear you quite clearly.
Yes, I'll try. I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just listening.
Oh, well, what I was saying, Murshid Hidayat, was that today our subject is from the Gathas on moral culture. And the subject is training the ego, and specifically the animal side of our ego.
Yes.
And, of course, I think this was one of our highest aspirations. I mean, you can advise us, but in terms of trying to create a democracy of the ego so that the nobility of the soul can shine forth. And I'm wondering if you could give us some words. We're waiting for your inspiration here.
Yeah, this is a very delicate subject, because in fact, well, we know words of Shakespeare, to be or not to be, in this difficult world, if we don't do our best to survive, we just get run over. As far as the ego was concerned, from the Sufi point of view, the idea is not to crush the ego, but to have full discipline over it, so that it's the strength of the ego, we can accomplish things, positive things or creative things, for the good of humanity. And that same ego can, on the other hand, make it constructive. So this is a very delicate subject. The point here is to know what are we going to do with that ego? What are we going to use it? As long as one only uses it for constructive purposes, the ego is a very precious energy. If one uses it for negative purposes, it's not advisable to develop it. On the contrary, it is advisable to try to delete it as much as can. But this is a very, very delicate subject, and not only that, it is the basis of anything that has to do with spirituality. Because if one can define spirituality in few words, would be by saying that the ego, which is a divine strength in us, is only valid from point of view if it's for creative purposes. And that same valuable energy can be destructive, and in that case, is spiritual. For the while, I think that's all I want to say.
It's very beautiful, and it's very succinct. It's very beautiful, and it's very succinct, and I think everyone here finds that very meaningful. People are here taking notes, so we are deeply appreciative, and we have noted it in our notebooks, and we've noted it in our hearts.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a great privilege, and I wish you all the best, and sending all our love.
Thank you. We love you too. Happy Mother's Day. And we're remembering your mother. We know that her special day was recently as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So let's just maintain a little silence here and contemplate what Murshid Hidayat has given us, that beautiful, succinct thought of the ego, that from a Sufi point of view, we are not attempting to crush the ego, that we recognize that the ego has a great power, and when used in a creative sense, it can be very constructive and useful. but the, as he said, it's a delicate issue because that same ego can emerge and be destructive, both to ourselves, to this world. And we know that when people have, we know that in ourselves, we see that at play in the world, when people feel that they are above and have the privilege of overcoming or overpowering others or misusing resources, what can happen. And that, of course, is the destructive aspect of our ego. So it is this delicate balance. And so let us observe the breath with contemplation of this thought. And of course, we know that the breath is one of the keys, that through the balance of the breath, the forces of nature within our being can be harmonized with the external forces, which are ultimately not external but one, and we can harmonize and tune to the creative force within us and within nature as a whole. If you will allow me, I will say the prayer Salat, which is the prayer that is the invocation of the Masters, Saints, and Prophets. And find yourself in a receptive mode during this invocation, where your heart, your mind, your soul invites all these illuminated beings to be with us. Most gracious Lord, Master, Messiah, and Savior of humanity, we greet thee with all humility. Thou art the first cause and the last effect, Alpha and Omega. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings, in a loving mother, in a kind father, in an innocent child, in a helpful friend, in an inspiring teacher. Allow us to recognize thee in all thy holy names and forms, as Rama, as Krishna, as Shiva, as Buddha. Let us know thee as Abraham, as Solomon, as Zarathustra, as Moses, as Jesus, as Muhammad, and in many other names and forms, known and unknown to the world, We adore thy past. Thy presence deeply enlightens our being, and we look for thy blessing in the future. O Messenger, Christ, Nabi, the Rasul of God, thou whose heart constantly reaches upward, thou comest on earth with a message, as a dove from above, when Dharma decayeth, and speakest the word that is put into thy mouth as the light filleth the crescent moon. May the star of the divine light shining in thy heart be reflected in the hearts of thy devotees. May the message of God reach far and wide, illuminating and making the whole of humanity as one single brotherhood in the fatherhood of God. So keep the attunement, please. Keep the breath. Although things come and go, these are the appearances of things, but aren't the reality. So please keep the attunement. Titled Universal Sufism, on the subject of the rhythm of the breath. The life of man is so pulled from all sides, so divided, that he often forgets things that are most essential to his life, which the lower creatures seem to keep more correctly in their lives. Neatness in man's work and balance in man's actions show rhythm in him. When man shows lack of balance in his life, and when his life is disturbed and all things seem to go wrong, it is most often that the rhythm of his breath has become wrong. Irregularity of activity and repose in the habits of life causes disorder of rhythm in the breath. Very often, the Eastern mystical exercises are wrongly understood by many. When a teacher gives a breathing exercise to his pupil, often he does not mean the breathing itself, but rhythm. Thought given to the breath becomes a weight upon it, and naturally holds it longer in its movement, altering it from what it would otherwise naturally be. It is the following of the rhythm of breath and the keeping of the rhythm regular which brings about
the best results. The whole creation has been formed by the law of rhythm, and rhythm is the cause of all the variety we see in nature. The sun, the moon, the stars, woman, man, and all other aspects of nature differ owing to the rhythm or to the law of rhythm. The seer understands all things and their past, present, and future by the rhythm of his breath. And so for a few moments, let's practice this rhythm of breath by simply putting a phrase on the rhythm of the breath. And we breathe in while thinking, draw us closer to thee. And we breathe out every moment of our life. Draw us closer to thee in every moment of our life. And you may say, every moment of my life. You can personalize it. Draw me closer to thee and out every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. And let the breath come into this natural swing, even in, even out, with this thought. The Sufis do this practice of fikr, so that the very ideal that we're concentrating on, while in a rhythmic breathing pattern, circulates throughout our entire system with each breath, with each pulsing of the heart, and it permeates every fiber of our being. Draw me closer to thee and out every moment of my life. For us to share together the subtlety of this practice when it is said as a zikr, meaning aloud, in a remembrance, calling aloud. When we go then into the fikr that we were just doing,
which is then, we'll actually whisper it. So in other words, we'll say together, draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Here the idea is, just as in zikr, when it is done in the formal sense, as it's been given by a Nayakan, the zikr is done aloud in its full phrase, then it becomes more subtle and softer. It's as if each one of these phrases, each word, a sacred word, each phrase of a zikr, is as if we're calling to the beloved. And at times the beloved may seem like a distance, and we're calling, come, come, please come closer. It's an invocation. And you know, when your lover is very close, there's no need to yell, at least one wouldn't hope so. So you're whispering very intimately, draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. And then you know that feeling where you meet the beloved at this sort of zenith or this peak moment where there's no need for words, only breath. And you fall into this rhythm of the breath with this phrase on the breath. And at one point, even the phrase falls away, and all that is. This is the subtlety of these practices, not often practiced, but this is what I want to impress upon you here. Sometimes this subtlety is forgotten and can be missed if we're not instructed in this way. This is the meaning of the Sufi: love, lover, and beloved. This is beyond all excitement, but it leads to great exaltation, and I hope you can understand the difference between excitation and exaltation. So only 11 times we say it aloud, the phrase, then we whisper it, because we've drawn this, our beloved, closer, and then we fall into the silence. Just the vibration of being the beloved in this phrase draws closer to thee every moment of our life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Now we whisper, draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. Draw me closer to thee. be every moment. Now just you see, when the practice is done in this way, and these are the instructions that all of my students receive when they're doing their personal practices, first aloud, then on the whisper, then silently, it does what? What does that, what's the difference between aloud and then becoming more and more quiet? What does it do? What was your experience? Can anyone share that? Or articulated.
For me, it changed the vibration. Mm-hmm. I went farther and farther in.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my practices that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
It felt intimate.
Oh, doesn't it?
Mm.
Isn't that such a privilege? It's not externalized anymore. It really becomes a living reality inside one's being. Anyone else? It really does also embrace that Jalal, which is the more expressive mode of the breath. The Jamal, which is the more feminine mode of the breath, and the Kamal, which is the perfection of the two of them. You see?
Mm-hmm.
It's these subtle phases that we take our consciousness through, and we can experience that too. We know how important that is. And it ties again to what Moshe Dayak was, those instructions on the ego, because we can see that there are times where truly when the ego is in servitude, it can rise up in a powerful force as an agent of change, the Jalal force. And it can also be very receptive when it needs to draw what it needs into itself, the Jamal force, and it knows when to absolutely be still. So we can learn these things by doing these practices together and then also individually, as you say. It draws it into you more as it becomes more intimate, more close to you. And when we can do that, we quiet ourselves and we can even feel who we are. You know, we come to know that better. And Hedayat, Mersha Hedayat began it with that quote by Shakespeare, yes?
Mm-hmm.
To thine own self be true, didn't he say that? What did he say?
To be or not to be.
To be or not to be. That's exactly right.
Know when to be, when not to be, also is also very effective. He loves that. He loves that phrase. He uses it a lot. Mm-hmm. He's given whole talks on that, to be or not to be. So that's exactly the point, isn't it? And we have that experience also. The very active, expressive modality of the practice is that active being, and we become less being and into that state of not being, but union. And we have to forget ourselves. So before we get into the main reading for today, I thought I would offer a few short readings, again from Mersha Hadayat's book called Reflections on the Art of Personality. And this book is really quite wonderful because, you know, it just gives you a little thought, and that could become the thought for the day or the week. It's not written in a normal fashion, but just these hippie thoughts. So, it's not noted here, but it is number one that I'm reading now. Willpower plays a great part in character building, but willpower loses its strength when it yields to every little tendency, inclination, and fantasy. Willpower is developed through fighting against one's own negative tendencies. Or here, Mersha Hadayat said, destructive forces. Willpower is developed through fighting against one's own negative tendencies. And I will say, whenever we do a practice which regulates the rhythm of the breath, or as we just did, where we actually are very conscious of things being said aloud and then making them go and more subtle, that is also an act of will. There can be the tendency to follow others' rhythm, either in everyday life or in group practice. We see that happen sometimes. And that's why we rely so much on our musicians to not hurry things, to keep that post for us. It's very critical. I know my friend Karuna Maima, a great Indian raga singer, in the middle of concerts, I have seen her stop. And she's singing these beautiful Indian ragas, and she will stop if that drummer is getting, you know, there's very specific rhythms in ragas, and they always begin very slow and very controlled. They go in a rhythm, a cycle of three, and they get a little faster, and then there's an improvisation at the end. I don't say that quite right, but you got the point. It's a very controlled beat in the beginning, and she will stop. She will not be rushed, because it's very important to these invocations and the ragas to keep that rhythm. And so we also want to maintain that and help to maintain that within our own practice and within the group as well. This is number 10. Human nature is such that there is an inner urge to express one's thoughts and feelings, and this energy may push out of oneself a word or an action. How often we have that impulse and we wish we hadn't, right? Isn't it true? If on afterthought one realizes that one should not have behaved in such a way, it is already too late. Harm has been done. as if they say once the bell is, you know, struck, it can't be unrung. One has given into a lack of willpower and also hurt the feelings of others. Silence is golden. Best. Button up the lip. A couple more. This is number 96. And this relates to some of our past classes, because we've talked about the ego being both arrogant and prideful, as well as being submissive and overly humble. And that we've said this is two sides of the same coin, not to be deceived by that. So here is relating to that subject. Self-consciousness displays endless facets, some reflecting inferiority complexes, such as the need for praise and admiration. You see how it can be that way. You're drawing other people into your sphere by it. I'm not this, I'm that. No, yes, you are. You're very good. You're this, oh, you're so beautiful. I think you're so intelligent. It's so wonderful. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. You see how interesting this is? This is the play of the ego. And it's good we can laugh because we recognize it. We do it. And we all have those moments also where we just, you know, it's just that whatever that little self is comes out and needs that nurturance and that acceptance and that love and that recognition. It's part of human nature. But it's good to see it, and it's good to laugh at it so that when it comes up, we can grab hold of it and say, hey, you crafty little fellow or little gal there, you stop it. Okay. So self-consciousness displays endless facets, some reflecting inferiority complexes, such as the need for praise and admiration, and others arising from superiority complexes, such as the feeling of satisfaction in humiliating and dominating others. Now, I don't know how that may play out in one's life, but, you know, sometimes it arises even just driving the car. Well, I'll be damned if that person's going to beat me. They just, you know, whatever. Look at them. They're going to rush right up into that grocery store line. I'm first. You know, sometimes it comes out like that, very subtle in our thinking, right? Be my guest. You're most welcome. Be gracious. Let them go. You never know. So again, the others, they arise as this self-consciousness displays itself in these facets, and some of its superiority complexes, such as the feeling of satisfaction in humiliating or dominating others, with an unquenchable thirst for self-assertion. The more one tries to hide one's weaknesses behind a false mask, the more one's self-confidence collapses like a sandcastle under the waves of the rising sea. The more one tries to hide one's weaknesses behind a false mask, the more one's self-confidence collapses like a sandcastle under the waves of the rising sea. Believe me, every weakness, perceived weakness, can be turned into the greatest strength. And one should not feel that one should make. Only thing that one should feel regret about is not remembering God and hurting the feelings of another. But everything that has happened to you, every injustice, every humiliation, if you can think that this has come as a blessing of God, you can rise above it, and you can turn that defeat and humiliation into one of your greatest jewels in your crown of glory. It will make you who you are, and there is no need whatsoever to feel any shame about that. One should feel ashamed for hurting the feelings of another. But otherwise, anything that has come to you or been done upon you, you can rise above it. And you will. You will. And it will become an example for others who need to overcome such things. And lip service is really cheap. Experience is very valuable. And one last quote. A noble-minded person has a natural feeling for respect, which is not only expressed in the word, but also in the attitude. Keeping one's word of honor under all conditions could be understood as having respect for the trust given to one. A noble-minded person has a natural feeling for respect, which is not only expressed in the word, but also in the attitude. Keeping one's word of honor under all conditions could be understood as having respect for the trust given to one.